We're doing Maaseh Shimshon and the Timnis, Samson's first wife, has been threatened by the Philistines that they'll kill her, they'll burn her father's house with her and her siblings. They'll kill them all if she doesn't divulge the answer to the riddle. And the Timnis is very scared, she's not sure what to do, and she takes a consultation with Mirma, with deceit, which is actually personified in the play. And then along comes Yelida Cheshek, the angel, we said it seems like Cupid, who's responsible for desire. And the Timnis has conversed with both of them. And now we're up to the final lines. Ata lo shamat bitich ta'asi. Now, my daughter, haven't you heard? Here's what you do, as we agreed. Hine shamati. The Timnis concludes the conversation and says, I've heard, ken sforot lo yida'a, echacha tilatech ki rabba. I can't even count how much praise I owe you. Heni sporota imedom sela. I can't give a count, it's so much. I'm better off being silent because whatever I say won't be enough. And we pointed out last week that there's a constant recurring correlation here between what the Timnis says in praise of deceit. And these are borrowed terms from Tanakh that are used to praise Hashem. And we said it certainly seems like Ramchal is alluding to the idea that in life we have two choices. We have a choice between two things. We can work with Hashem, Bitamim, or we can try to work with deceit and try to use cunning and achieve our goals in improper ways. Ki ad chunatayin lo avoa, yaday lama ofi chen ladom ashiva. I'm never going to praise you enough. I'm never going to get to the bottom of it. So I'm going to put my hand on my mouth to silence it. Avodati al mizbechei chakriva, but I will continue sacrificing to you. Which seemingly indicates, we discussed last week, that if you succeed in one direction, then you're more apt to do it again. We discussed a child throwing a tantrum. If he wins, so then he'll throw a bigger tantrum next time, because you're teaching him that this method works. Hinei dumiyat tehila, im rabu tehilot ish ad lo yisaferu. Praise, there's so much praise that's owed to you, it's better to be silent. Ki mikol tichlam od yochavu, ech lasim ketz lehem nashav yomeru. Again, many borrow terms of praise towards Hashem, which she's saying for deceit. She's saying there's no limit to how much praise I really owe you. And with that, we concluded the 10th chapter. And now the Timnis is going to get to work. And what we're going to see is an interesting game that she really has to play. She has to attack Shimshon and put him on the defensive. And yet, she has to give the perception that she's the one who's on the defensive. Now, any of you who have had contact with a woman will know that this is not uncommon, where a guy walks in and let's say they agreed that they won't spend more than a certain amount on the credit card, and she does, and he comes in and he's upset, and then she's all hurt. And he says, wait a second, I'm supposed to comfort you? Or she can come and start a fight and then turn it as though he's the one who's so nasty to her. The Gemara discusses this. The Gemara discusses a circumstance where a woman was immodest with a man, where her husband asked her, don't be alone with this guy. And she was. And now he's uncertain what happened. And she's going to pick fights with him, even though she's the one who was immodest. And the Gemara discusses that this is a way that sometimes things play themselves out. So this is what the Timnis is going to have to try and do. On the one hand, be on the attack. On the other hand, her attack is always going to be on the defensive. So we're going to see this game in her speech. Dodi, my beloved. So she approaches Shimshon. Tzvi chishki. The epitome of my desire, et ki eracha itrotzitzu bi seifai gam yachad. When I see you, my thoughts get up in a whirlwind together. Ki echze michlol yefifanecha. I just see the encompassing beauty of your face. Kanfei noga lecha ki ala yofiu. You have wings that are shining. You emanate light. As you appear before me, chitzei gibol lishnunim yashuru. Yeshuvu or Yeshuvu? I can't see clearly.
Yeshuvu.
It says, your sharp arrows pierce me. Yimchatzuchi liotai velo yachmolu. Your beauty pierces my innards without mercy. Yekad bilibi ki godei shochelet. And within me burns a fire of compassion. Nafshi v'nafshecha yachdav nikshara. My soul is so connected to you. Notice how she begins with sweet talk. I love you so much. And when I see you, I get so excited. Now, even within this first introductory speech, in a second she's going to turn on him and say, and you're so nasty to me. You don't care. You don't love me. In a minute she's going to start that. But that's the next line. But even here, Ramchal introduced a lot of humor. Let's see, what words did she use? She said, Chitzei gibor li shnunim. I have sharpened arrows that you've shot at me with your love. Okay, let's see, where do those words show up in Tanakh? Chitzei gibor shinunim. So let's open to Tehillim, the 120th chapter. Tehillim Kufcha.
Is it 50? I think it's L. Why can't it just be in English? 120.
Kuf Chaf. Tehillim Kuf Chaf, the 120th chapter. Shir HaMa'alot, one of the songs of the Shir HaMa'alot, the end of Psalms. El Hashem batzarata li karati vayaneni. I call out to Hashem when I'm in a time of dire need, David HaMelech says. He says, Hashem, what's the next pasuk? Hatzila nafshi mi svat sheker, save my soul from lips that lie. Milashon remia, from a tongue that is deceitful. Okay, so the connection is pretty obvious, right? Let's see. Ma'iten lecha uma yosif lach lashon remia. David HaMelech says, what do you stand to benefit from being deceitful? Chitzei gibor shinunim im gachalei retamim. The arrows of the brave warrior are so sharpened, he has coals that are like coals made from a special type of cactus called the rotem cactus, which produces the hottest coals that maintain embers long after any other ones do. So he's turning to the person who is deceitful, who is speaking against him, who is lying, and he says, your arrows are so sharp, they shoot from far away. Because when we lie, when a person will tell slander about someone else, so then from far away they can hurt the person. Speech is something that's like an arrow. You could shoot it from afar, you don't have to endanger yourself, and it could be detrimental. So David HaMelech is describing all those people who lied and were able to take other people down with these sharp arrows of deceit. Now let's see these words in her speech. Ramchal puts this in her mouth. She says, your sharpened arrows come back against me, your arrows of love. But where do these words show up in Tanakh only once? Chitzei gibor shinunim. They show up once in Tanakh. to describe arrows that are really deceit and lies. So here Amchal is putting in her mouth the words that really describe what she's doing. Deceit and lies. She's coming and saying, I love you so much. Really? Yimchatsu chilyotai velo yachmolu. So here also we can compare it to another chapter in Tehillim, but let's move forward. My soul connects to your soul. It's interesting how empty their connection seems to be. Because whenever we read about their connection, he's talking about her beauty, she's talking about his beauty. This is the first time we see that she speaks about a soul connection. My soul and your soul are intertwined. And the only time we can catch her saying that is when she's lying, when she's trying to get something out of Samson. And then she turns on him and says, Ach och pecha kashe az ki abita. As much as I love you, I look at your stiff neck. Tomar ki tidbakbi. You say you cling to me, you say you're connected to me. Verachokata, and yet you're so distant. Tachat avati. In exchange for the love I give you, sinat hashiva, you give me back hatred. Tachat rishpei ishi, yamod kirach. I am so warm, I am inflamed over you, and you are ice. Milibecha yarchik veizrehana. Your heart is distant, and you'd shake me out like you'd be pouring out coals. Veizrehala libi ki sineitani. You distance my heart because you hate me. Now, let's skip for a second. She's going to have this whole long tirade. And when she finishes, let's see what Shimshon answers her. Just so we understand, you're seeing one side of the play. He walked into the room and she begins very warmly. I love you so much. I get so excited to see your beauty. Our souls are so united. She's starting sweet. She looks, imagine a warm face. He's looking, he's smiling. And suddenly she says, you're so tough! You don't love me. You hate me. I love you so much. What are you doing to me? And what does Shimshon say after this whole long speech? He turns to her and says, beloved, my dove, what are you getting so excited about? Why are you crying? Meaning, at this point, he's unfazed. He does love her. Now, what usually happens when someone tells you you don't love me? You get upset. You stop loving them. What happens is you feel like, wait a second, after everything I've done, how can you say I don't love you? Meaning our ego gets hurt, and then we really start loathing the person. We get upset at the person. Our first reaction is, wait, this isn't fair. Of course I love you, and why should you talk to me that way? If you loved me, you wouldn't talk that way. That's not what Shimshon says. The great Shimshon is not going to answer her that way. On the contrary, as she's saying this, he seems unfazed. She's not done. We just got started. So she says, you hate me. And I'm not going to hold myself back anymore. I'm going to keep myself away from you. Because obviously that's what you want. I'm not going to be stiff-necked, oh cruel one like you. But my heart is enwrapped by a stream of sorrow. Imagine she sheds a tear. She says, streams of tears pour from my eyes. My heart is melted as I'm gripped with fear. I see how tough you are, how cruel you are. But what can I say? But I, obviously, I deserve it. Ashachatati latet megedodai achzar elecha. I sinned by giving my sweet love to the cruel one, to you.
Wait, is this all to get the secret how to bind Shimshon?
She isn't yet telling him what she wants from him. No, it's not to bind them. She wants the answer to the riddle. He told the riddle to her to the 30 young men there. And said, and he didn't tell her the answer. We don't even have testimony yet that she asked the question, but we'll assume she asked, and he didn't tell her the answer. So now he's getting this whole long speech. What did I do? You know, what would the average guy say? Did you eat something wrong? Did you have too much to drink at last night's party? Okay, what do you want from my life? No, Shimshon's the perfect gentleman. But she is not withholding any word. She calls him already twice cruel. She tells him, you hate me. And he doesn't even know what she wants yet. I've connected to you as though you were a friend. Machatati negdecha yelidacheshek kiviat zeoref barzel shatani. What have I sinned against you? He who bears desire, he who caused me to desire connection with this one. What did I do to deserve to connect with a man who's got a neck of iron, so stiff? Ta'ir betoch libi krav aneshek. Bimri otzbi eshkach ki yisartani. You arouse within me war. You arouse within me a cry to arms. In my sorrow, I will try to forget how much you've made me suffer. And Shimshon says, Mate mi ala yonati. My dove, what are you upset at me? Why are you accosting me? Lama tivki, why are you crying? And she yells back, Lama evkeva tistemeini. Why do I cry? You hate me. Now, before we continue, Ramchal has interjected a lot of humor into her speech. Nachale dim'a einai teradna. My eyes are tearing. What's she saying? You don't seem to be noticing. I'm crying. Don't you see there are tears coming down my eyes? Now this is a tool that's often used by adults and children. People think that if they shed tears, then obviously they're in the right. Some people really believe that. Sometimes kids will come to you and one is weeping, and sometimes parents fall for it. But the truth is, there's no correlation between tears and justice. You know, and you see from her yelling at him that he isn't yet moved because he doesn't know what she wants from his life. She knows that and he knows that, but she's telling him, look at all the streams of tears coming down my cheek. Yeah, okay. Yimas libi. That line appears once in Tanakh. Yimas, shows up once in Tanakh. You know where? King David's son, Avshalom, has slowly but surely developed a rebellion against him. He's been perpetuating, he's been spreading lies against David, and at every interval that he finds an opportunity, he speaks about how he would have been kinder to people than his father. And over time, using different lies, he succeeds in swaying the majority of the nation against his father. He leads a rebellion, and his father, seeing that the masses are with Avshalom, runs. Now, David has an advisor who is so brilliant that the Navi says, asking him was like asking God. His name is Achitophel. Achitophel is a super genius. He's very young. He's 31, 32. He's married when he was very young. He got married. And his son got married when he was very young. And so his granddaughter, Bathsheba, at 7 years old, is the girl that David took while her husband, who was one of David's chief generals, one of David's bravest warriors, was out at war. And then David caused her husband to die. And so Achitophel wants David dead, because Achitophel has just witnessed how David used his power to take his own granddaughter, Bathsheba. Ultimately, Achitophel is making a big mistake, because the whole Davidic dynasty is going to come from him, from his granddaughter, Bathsheba. But that's not what Achitophel sees right now. Achitophel sees in some form of prophetic vision that greatness is supposed to come out of him. He doesn't realize it's exactly from that union that upsets him, that greatness is going to come from him. So Achitophel allows himself to join Avshalom's rebellion because he feels he has an insight into the way God plans things to happen. And he figures Avshalom will lead the rebellion, but I know that the continuation of leadership is supposed to come from me. And Achitophel sides with Avshalom and helps him lead the rebellion. So he's young. He's in his early 30s. He's already a grandfather. And he hates David with a passion. And Achitophel tells Avshalom, let me take 12,000 men, 1,000 from each tribe, and chase David tonight. Achitophel first tells Avshalom, look, everyone has to have second thoughts about whether to join you or not, because you're David's son. Everyone knows David doesn't want you dead. They have to wonder whether you want David dead. They have to worry there's going to be reconciliation here. If you want a real rebellion, you have to rape David's concubines. And then everyone will know that there's no way David can ever reconcile with you, because if he does, he has to kill you. And Avshalom does that. And then Achitophel tells Avshalom, okay, now the people are confident behind you. Part of Achitophel's plan is, if we get David, then I can execute Avshalom for raping married women. So he's given Avshalom advice, which is good for Avshalom on the one hand, but there's a cunning behind it on the other hand. And then Achitophel tells Avshalom, I'll take 12,000 men. Tonight I'll chase David. He's on the run. He's unprepared. Whatever happens, we'll finish him off. And Achitophel's right. David is unprepared. His people are hesitant. He doesn't know where to run. He hasn't had time to think things through. This caught him unprepared. They did a really good job. And if Avshalom would listen to Achitophel, then he would have finished David off. There was no way David could win. And so Avshalom accepts the plan. Says it's a great idea. The only thing is, there was a man, a Kohen, Hushai Ha'arki. There was a very smart man who used to counsel David. And when David was leaving Jerusalem, Hushai said, let me join you. David told Hushai, look, if you come to me, you're an old man, you'll be a hindrance. I need you to do one thing. Stick around, and whatever Achitophel says, you say the opposite. So David doesn't know what Achitophel is going to advise Avshalom. But he says to Hushai, look, I know Achitophel. He's the smartest man around. I need you to do one thing. Achitophel says right, you say left. Achitophel says straight, you say back. It doesn't matter if you think Achitophel is right or wrong. I need you to do one thing. Contradict what Achitophel says. So when Avshalom comes to Jerusalem, Achitophel comes out to greet him and says, welcome, my king. To which Avshalom says, wait a second, aren't you faithful to my dad? And Hushai says, well, I was, you're right, but you're the new king, so why shouldn't I be faithful to you now? Fine. Now that Achitophel's given his counsel, Avshalom says, wait, before we act on it, let's hear Hushai out. Maybe Hushai has something to say. So they summon Hushai into Avshalom, and Avshalom tells him, tell me, here's what Achitophel said. Do you think we should listen to him or not? Hushai says, you know what? This is the one time Achitophel got it wrong. Listen here. You know your dad. You know his men. They're tremendous warriors. They're not new at this. And now they're especially embittered because they're like a bear whose child's been taken at the field. Your father's a man of war. He's not going to let the people rest tonight. I'll tell you what's going to happen. If you move out right now, your father is hiding somewhere in ambush. He knows you're ready to come. And the first attack you make, it'll be your first war. You don't stand a great chance of winning because he'll pounce on you. You won't be prepared. He's waiting for you to come. He could set up an ambush. And you know what'll happen? People will hear you lost. And whatever support you've had until now will melt away. And that's the Pasuk. Pasuk Yuri says, Vehu gam ben chayil. And even the bravest warrior who has the heart of a lion, when he hears that your father has won the first battle, his heart will melt. He won't be able to stand up and join your forces. What you have to do is right now, you have Jerusalem, gather the forces, gather the troops throughout Israel. Gather the greatest army, and then it doesn't matter where David will want to go, we'll take him down. Hushai has done what David asked him to do, and he is successful. Avshalom listens to him, and Achitophel, when he sees his counsel wasn't heeded, he says, it's over. He goes home, summons his family, gives them his last word, gives them the last edict, and hangs himself. He knows, he's so smart, he knows that if Avshalom didn't listen to him, it's over, Avshalom's not going to win. But when...
Why would he hang
himself? He has no portion in the world to come either. Avshalom is a dead man in both ways. Now, we're out of time in a minute. What?
He's another one?
Yeah, we said Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, right?
No.
Aleph is Achitofel. Aleph is Achitofel. Beis is Bilam. Gimel is Gechazi. Yeah. So the four simple men, not kings, who do not have a portion in the world to come, Aleph is Achitofel.
David Melech called him his master and his teacher. And his
yeah, yeah. Okay, wait. Achav has a portion in the world to come, for sure. It's in the Pasuk even. So coming back to here, so when Hushai is lying, when Hushai is trying to mislead Avshalom, he says, even the bravest warrior, when he hears your father was victorious in the first battle, his heart will melt. Is it true or lie? It's a lie. Ahitophel's advice was right. David was in no shape to fight a battle at that time. He hadn't had time to arrange anything. He didn't have food. He didn't have clothing. He didn't have weapons. He was in no shape for a battle. And the capital was not where he had any preparation. The time that Hushai gains him is the time that allows him to actually be victorious over Avshalom. But here, what does she say? He may seemastly be. My heart melts over your cruelty. Ramchal put in her mouth the words that appear only once in Tanakh, Himes Himas. It appears only once when it's a lie. When Hushai is also trying to say, you know, their hearts will melt. He knows it won't happen. So we'll pick up here, Bezachim, next week.